Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Georgia United Credit Union. Show your team pride with the Georgia Bulldogs debit card. Check out gucu.org/godogs for more details.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
All right, let me get this out of the way off the top. Saturday was miserable. You know that. Sunday was depressing. Weather didn't help. You're aware of that as well. And now Monday, a chance to kind of turn the page here a little bit. And I guess while we're on the confession part of all this, I'll even admit, honesty compels me to, that maybe even a little bit of a tinge of embarrassment in the fact that going into Saturday's game against South Carolina, I thought it'd be a lot easier. Frankly, I thought a lot of Georgia games this season were going to be a lot easier than they may turn out to be. So we know those feelings are there kind of off the top of the program. However, as I said to our video audience a moment ago, here's what I'm also betting on. As real as all of that is, some of y'all are just ready to kind of turn the page on this now and kind of start looking ahead just a little bit. So we're going to try to do that the best we can. We'll be very honest about what Saturday was, but also, I guess, realistic about what the next few games can be and how Georgia gets better from here. And a lot of this is going to be related to some of the stuff that Kirby Smart said going back to Saturday, because listening to him in his post-game press conference, kind of thinking about everything that goes down in the game, I'm really left with what I think are five quick fixes for the Georgia offense, because let's face it, the Georgia offense is the problem right now, and I think that there are some things that Georgia can do without a whole lot of massive overhaul or anything like that can make things at least a little bit better for now. And then, you know, once the season's over and we see what the results are, we can kind of figure out if there's anything more substantial than that needs to be corrected. But in terms of this upcoming Saturday against Kentucky and this gauntlet in the month of November, I think there are five things that Georgia can do to make the results better than they were against South Carolina. And by the way, boy, do they need to be. I know you already know that. Let me start with this. Kirby Smart on Saturday, in terms of his prognosis for why this game was lost, it was pretty simple in his mind that when you do this as much as Georgia did, you are not coming back from that, at least in his mind. Here's what Kirby said about the turnovers.
You can't beat anybody when you lose turnover margin 4-0. We talk about it every Monday in our meetings, and we were 4- in the turnover margin. That's twofold. We didn't force any on defense, really didn't cause any problems for them when it comes to that, and then obviously didn't take care of the ball offensively.
So listen, I mean, no one's going to deny that. I read the stat blogs. A lot of you do there as well. You know what the win probability turns down to when you lose the turnover margin by one, and then by a couple, and then three, and then four. Almost no one wins when they have a -4 turnover differential. Kirby's right about that. However, I hope that's not the only thing that he thinks was wrong on Saturday, because the truth is, this was just kind of a little bit of a weird kind of game. While -4 in the turnover differential will usually get you beat, South Carolina, its offense only had 4 trips inside the 40. So this was kind of a weird game in their situation. They had a quarterback that got injured, and so some of their drives essentially stalled out much the same way turnovers would have. So while Georgia was -4, that typically gets you beat. This is also kind of a weird game in which the Gamecocks, for the most part, weren't doing very much offensively at all once Ryan Helinski went out of the game. And also, I'll say this about the interceptions. We're going to get to Jake Fromm here, because Fromm had, obviously, a terrible game on Saturday, and the pick six that he threw was, I think, probably the single worst throw that he's thrown in his college career. I don't know that he threw that many that bad in his high school career either, and if Jake was sitting here right now, he'd say the exact same thing. Everybody acknowledges how bad that throw was. But the other two interceptions, when you look at the receivers that were targeted there, and we don't play the blame game here on this show because, first of all, that's not a very classy thing to do, and second of all, this is not like mid-90s AM sports talk radio. But you kind of know what you see here, and I think my first quick fix for Georgia is it's got to shorten its bench with wide receivers. Look at two of the three Fromm interceptions on Saturday, and you see receivers targeted, where I would question, why is the ball going there instead of more throws going to George Pickens, more throws going to Demetrius Robertson? Those are receivers who've proven to be valuable for you. More throws going to Dominic Blaylock. Limited use, but I believe that Blaylock is pretty clearly right now one of Georgia's four best, to say nothing of Lawrence Cager, who is getting targeted as much as he's supposed to. He just unfortunately left the game with injury. But if you want to talk about what Georgia does from here to get better, I think simply put, it starts with shortening the number of receivers you're using. This is not the Under Armour All-American game. You can't coach like that at the major college level. You can't just rotate a whole fresh bunch of guys in and out after every play. The quarterback doesn't get a rhythm with the receivers. And frankly, at some point in time, you're playing players that don't have equal level of production. And when you're splitting the the snaps the way that Kirby is, you are therefore limiting your production by the substitution patterns that you're using. I think simple, first and foremost, that's one of the things you got to talk about, which leads Kirby to say some more things about the wide receivers from Saturday. And I was actually very impressed with how blunt Kirby was in assessing the situation with what this group did and didn't do going back to Saturday. Here's Kirby on the receivers again.
Yeah, they did a great job. If you had to say one thing that they did well, they got their hands on our guys, and there was not a lot of vertical separation, you know. And there's a couple of those that's frustrating. They played man-to-man. They pressed George. They pressed Tyler. They pressed Lawrence. They pressed Cager. And, you know, they got two good corners that are really long. We knew that all week. So, you know, the idea was to try to get them on the move. To get people off of you, you have to get in bunches and do some different things. And we did a lot of those things to get them off of us. But they did. They did a nice job. A couple of those picks were because they were just all over us.
So fair response from Kirby. If I say you've got to shorten your bench and play your four best wide receivers more frequently and your other guys less frequently, what Kirby's going to come back and say, and probably rightly so, is some of the guys that I'm mentioning weren't exactly running wide open and running free on Saturday, because y'all can go back and watch the DVR replay of this, and I'm sure many of you have. As Kirby says, the South Carolina secondary was blanketing Georgian pass coverage all day long. Now, part of that's because South Carolina was generating a pass rush with four guys. Must be nice. But when it comes to, you know, the South Carolina secondary, they're just all over the Georgia receivers. In fact, that's not the only thing that Kirby said up about that after the game. Let me let you hear Kirby on this same topic one more time.
Now, we called a lot of deep opportunities, but they're not there if they're getting pressed or at the line. You know what I mean? I mean, there were several deep balls thrown, but if you notice, there was no space. You know what I mean? They were on the sideline. They were out of bounds. They were getting wired. And got to do a good job winning one-on-one. And when the pass pro's there and you give Jake time, he's very accurate. But we got to get guys that can win one-on-one as well.
So, listen, this kind of leads me, I guess, to sort of the next thing I want to say in response to this, because, you know, Kirby's right. There's a moment where I'm watching the game on Saturday where I'm left wondering, obviously we're all going to be guilty of some knee-jerk reactions in the midst of a game that's as bad as this one was, but where's the Georgia speed? Where's the Georgia guy running away from a South Carolina defensive back? You know, where is that? It almost makes you say that when you look at the Georgia players who measurably have speed on offense, it's probably time for Georgia to get those guys involved just a little bit more. I mentioned Robertson earlier. He's clearly, I believe, Georgia's fastest wide receiver. He was targeted plenty on Saturday, but maybe he needs to be targeted even more, or maybe the play call design needs to be such that he can take more advantage of his speed. The same thing's probably true for James Cook as well. A little more involved late in the game than he had been early, but there's no doubt Cook seems to bring a speed element that's missing from this Georgia offense right now. Now, as I say all the time, there's no free lunch. You play the guys who are faster, you're probably going to have a trade-off there in some form or fashion somewhere, and I do get that. But hard not to notice from Georgia on Saturday that the speediest players in the Georgia offense maybe aren't being utilized as much as they could be, and the absence of speed, no pun intended, seems to be slowing the Georgia offense down during the game. Then you get to this, something we talked about a lot on Friday's show, that for everything that's been said about Georgia being too conservative and Georgia being too unimaginative on offense, I said for the dog fans who want to watch this game on Saturday, who want to zero in on a particular instance to determine how serious Georgia is about trying to be more explosive and how serious Georgia is about trying to be more creative offensively and get playmakers involved, I said on this show on Friday, look at what happens on second and rather long. We cited some numbers from Pro Football Focus that said Georgia's essentially among the five most likely teams in America to run on second and long, and that's not the kind of thing that explosive teams typically do. That if you want to add the passing element into your game plan more, those second long situations are where you've got to try to figure out a way to do that. And on Saturday, in the early going, it seemed like they tried to do that. You know, they threw the ball to Cager, for instance, on the first second down play of the game. But then after that, almost all runs in second down, including over and over again with the same up the middle thing that did not work in the second half. You all remember that. And after the game, Kirby was kind of challenged on that point. I was glad he was asked the question, and you can decide for yourself how effective the answer is.
I don't think so. I think you try to play to your strengths, and we've opened up some series with empty, with passes, and it's hard when you play behind the sticks on second and 10 as well. It's really tough when you get first down and you know everybody can say, well, don't go run the ball. When you're getting 4 yards, we consider that a pretty successful play. And there were some times we ended up 2nd-9, 2nd-10, but there were more times we ended up 2nd-6 and 2nd-5. And you've already made it where 2nd-down, you've got the option to do what you want, where the defense is on the defensive. But I certainly think that there were times we opened it up. We opened up some drives where we said, hey, we got to come out there and open it up, take a shot. And we did that a couple times, but you're not successful there. It's easy to come back and say, hey, well, why do you run it on first? Why do you run on second? Well, if you've got the strength of your team, it's your backs. And you feel like your backs can make guys miss, and the strength of your team is your offensive line, you try to rely on your strength. Once they negate that and you're not able to move them up front, then you got to try other things. And I thought that we tried to do both those. We opened it up, threw it to George over the middle one time, took a shot coming out, trying to do those things offensively.
A lot of what Kirby says there makes some sense, and obviously he's not wrong about all of that, and he obviously knows way more about this topic than I do, so you can decide for yourself if I'm even qualified to say he's wrong about anything. However, here is what I know the overwhelming majority of my audience thinks, that when you keep running what looks to be the same thing over and over again on first and second down, all of a sudden you take what's supposed to be a strength, your offensive line and your running backs, and you negate that on your own because you don't provide the element of surprise at all. South Carolina has a really good defensive line, but I believe that defensive line on Saturday was aided by simply knowing what Georgia was going to do. And that started before the game was in danger of being lost. Georgia is just too conservative on second down in particular. Many of you who watched or listened to Friday's show tweeted me about this topic, and we were kind of forced to commiserate with this together of, yeah, our worst fear kind of came true, that Georgia's content to kind of do the same thing over and over again. That's just not what modern offenses do. And so if you're looking for some simple fixes for the Georgia offense, that's the third one you add in here. Georgia's just got to be more creative, more dynamic, more aggressive on second down. So far we're up to three. Better play calling on second down, playing the fast players a little more often, and shortening the bench among the wide receivers. Those are three things that I think that Georgia can do starting this Saturday against Kentucky to make the offense better. Now, there are two more things to think about, and we're going to get to that coming up. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Hello to you, and thanks for being with us. No matter how you get to us today, we are brought to you by Georgia United Credit Union, and we're available on video at 10 a.m., Dog Nation Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, or on the radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, and we're available as a podcast wherever you find them, including the world-famous DogNation.com. And as I said before, I know it's not a happy day on the program, but I am glad you're here, and I know that you, very much like me, continue to support the Dogs no matter what the result is, and you're probably also like me and sharing a little optimism that things will be better eventually. We'll be happier when that's the case. And obviously one of the best ways you can support UGA here today is by going to Georgia United Credit Union and getting the Georgia Bulldogs debit card from Georgia United Credit Union. Three design options to choose from when you open your free Georgia United checking account that has options to earn interest. Now, these are great things about Georgia United Credit Union, but it's also a great institution to do business with because they've got 19 branch locations throughout the metro Atlanta area, and they'll give you access to 100,000 surcharge-free ATMs. They've got enhanced security features, convenient access to your money through online banking. Georgia United Credit Union is so much more than a bank. You can find out for that for yourself when you go to this website. It's gucu.org/godogs. gucu.org/godogs. And you can take advantage of the Georgia Bulldogs debit card from Georgia United Credit Union. All right. Not a great time for the Dogs, but things are going to be better and things are going to be happier. And when I'm thinking about happier times to come, one of the things I start thinking about is the world's largest outdoor cocktail party coming up in a couple of weeks. And yes, I know the internet is now convinced, Twitter especially, that Georgia is not going to beat Florida. Florida looks good even after losing to LSU. Georgia looks terrible. Y'all, if you think around here we're going to run and hide from this thing coming up on the first Saturday in November, you have another think coming. So with that in mind, we sold a ton of tickets to our Dog Nation Invasion tailgate this past Friday, kicking that thing off, and we're going to sell even more of that today because Georgia fans are going to be fired up to see their team play better. So be sure to get yours while you can because we have printed new Gator Hater t-shirts, and when those things are gone, they are gone. And hating Gators doesn't go out of style just because Georgia loses a game it's not supposed to. So let me give you the details here. It's coming up Saturday, November 2nd. That's obviously the date of the game, from 11:30 a.m. to 3:30 4:30 p.m. Our Dog Nation Invasion luxury tailgate includes food, beverage, entertainment, the whole nine yards. I'm going to be there. Jeff will be there. Mike Griffith will be there. Connor Riley will be there. And for the first 150 people to sign up, after that, well, we can't promise you anymore. But for the first 150, we will be printing you and giving you a Gator Hater t-shirt. I'm happy to welcome those back again. So DogNationInvasion.com is the website to go to. DogNationInvasion.com. That will get you one of the really cool Gator Hater t-shirts. All right, it is John Stinchcomb here coming up in just a moment. We will talk to him about what is going on with Georgia, his thoughts on the loss. Before that, though, let's go around the doghouse, presented today by Pella Window and Door. And I've given you three of my quick fixes for the Georgia offense, and I want to give you two more here quickly as a part of Around the Doghouse presented by Pella. I talked about shortening the bench for wide receivers a moment ago. I think there's also some personnel evaluation that needs to go along with Georgia's offensive line right now. Georgia's offensive line did not play great on Saturday, and I'm not quite so sure, even if everyone's 100% healthy right now, I'm not quite so sure that we know who Georgia's five best offensive linemen are at the moment. Nor am I so sure that Sam Pittman and Kirby Smart knows that either. This group got beaten up pretty good against the Gamecocks on Saturday, and it wasn't pretty. And after the game, Kirby Smart essentially admitted that. Here's Kirby on the OL.
We've got to do a good job of moving forward and understand we have to get better. We have to get better. We've got to be able to get the ball in space, be able to make some plays with some guys, be able to block people up front. You know, everybody wants to talk about our offensive line being a dominant offensive line. I love to talk about that, but they got to do it. We got to go out there and do it and occupy the line of scrimmage and win the line of scrimmage over and over. And in this league, it's tough to do that all the time because they got good players too. Those front players they got up there, they got good players.
You guys were rolling guys in and out on the offensive line. Was that because of injuries or just trying to find that right mix?
No, we had some guys dinged up. I mean, Sally was banged up. Ben was banged up. We had several guys in there banged up.
So, listen. Offensive line injuries are an issue that every team's going to deal with, and for Georgia, it is making some substitutions because it's having to deal with that. But beyond that, I'm not quite so sure that some of the substitutions we saw on Saturday was all based on injury, nor am I quite so sure that the injured players were the places where you were having the biggest issue with your offensive line. There were guys getting beaten, you know, off the snap, kind of blown off the ball. There were low snaps to Fromm. There was kind of a little bit of everything kind of going on there with that group. And obviously, the nucleus of this team is supposed to be its OL. And so one way or another, with Kentucky this week, bye week after that, and then the very difficult stretch that begins with Florida to start the month of November, I think one of the hot topics around UGA is going to be how it plays better along the offensive line, and who are the five guys that are supposed to contribute the most to that success. And once you figure out those five, barring injury, I'm not quite so sure that Georgia should be playing anybody else right now. I think offensive line looks like another spot where UGA just seems to be substituting a little bit too much. And then one more thing really quickly here, because I know I've kind of gone a little bit long here. We got John coming up. One more thing really quickly. Obviously, Saturday was another fan favorite not having his best day. In this case, it's Rodrigo Blankenship. Missed a couple field goals, including the one at the end that ultimately ended the game. No one's going to change their affection and feelings for Rodrigo over all of this. He'll be loved by Dog Nation forever. And yet, obviously, Rodrigo, much like Jake Fromm, is going to have to go back to the drawing board and figure out how it gets better from here. Kirby Smart did offer this on Rodrigo after the game.
Oh, man, that guy's made so many critical field goals. Tough. Gotta go back to work. You know what I mean? We're going to show confidence in Hot Rod because he's a worker. We believe in him. He's meant so much to us. He's given us so much, and that's tough. I mean, their kicker missed one too. You know, it's tough. When you play that and you got that environment, you got to be able to make those field goals. Rod knows that, and we support him. We love him, and we some other games we wouldn't have won without him.
Look, Rodrigo Blankenship is still a great kicker, but it is a disservice to Blankenship to assume that the standard for Blankenship is supposed to be perfection. He obviously was going to miss a kick at some point in time this year, and unfortunately in this case, he missed one at the least opportune time, the one that ultimately ended the game. As I said before, we kind of do a disservice to him. We assume perfection is supposed to be his standard. I think that Kirby Smart, though, also does a disservice to his offense when he game plans in such a way that he thinks, well, if all else fails, I'll just rely on a perfect field goal kicker. I mean, ultimately, for Kirby Smart and for James Coley, the offensive coordinator, their idea has got to be that when we're trying to win a game in the SEC, the kind of step on your throat, killer instinct mentality required there, that even attempting a field goal is failure. That field goal attempts in of themselves themselves are failure when touchdowns ought to be the goal. Because let's face it, as good as Rodrigo is, we are still talking about the old joke about hashtag college kickers. Field goal kicking is erratic. And it's not just true in college. It's true in the NFL as well, where, you know, guys are up and they're down. They're paid a lot of money, then they're out of the league. I mean, it's hard to predict what happens when the ball's in the air trying to go through those uprights. Rodrigo's as good as it gets. I wouldn't trade him for anyone. But I also wouldn't trade a field goal attempt for an opportunity to go for a touchdown. And a more aggressive killer instinct mentality mindset, that to me is the fifth thing that Georgia needs to do pretty quickly here to fix this offense. You do that, you be a little bit more aggressive in going for touchdowns, you settle on your best five offensive linemen, play those guys exclusively barring injury, do the same thing with your wide receivers, shorten the bench, get the faster offensive guys like James Cook a little bit more involved. You know, things like that I think are going to make the Georgia offense better. These are quick fixes, but it doesn't mean the process itself is going to be quick. It may take a few weeks for Georgia to get there, but they certainly have the chance to be able to do that. It's Around the Doghouse. It's presented today by Pella Window and Door, and Pella Window and Door of Georgia can help equip your house with energy-efficient windows and doors. They're family-owned and operated, which means you get local service, but they're also a national company, which means you get the power and the strength that comes from that. And right now, they've got a great offer for you there as well. You can get 50% off qualifying installations or 0% APR for 48 months, but you've got to act right now because that offer's only good through November the 14th. They also offer the best lifetime warranty and top-of-the-line equipment, unparalleled expertise, so a couple ways for you to get in touch. You can find them online at PellaSoutheast.us. That's PellaSoutheast.us. Or you can give them a call, and they're done with your showroom at 404-445-2979. It's 404-445-2979. Pella Window and Door of Georgia, viewed to be the best. All right, we've got more on Jake Fromm and kind of what did not go right for him on Saturday, what he said about that, what Kirby Smart said about that. We will get to that later, but it's John Stinchcomb right now.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Hope I didn't give leave my friend John Stinchcomb on hold for too long there. I apologize for that, but I am glad to have him as part of the program here today to talk about what happened for Georgia on Saturday. So, John, here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Georgia United Credit Union, I guess let me just start right there. What did happen on Saturday?
not a lot of great things for this offense. You know, you look at it, and the mistakes jump out at you. And, you know, tip of the cap to South Carolina because they came in with a game plan and they executed it. And that game plan relied on Georgia making mistakes, and we provided those. You know, for the number three team in the nation, you couldn't afford to have that many mistakes. And boy, did it bite them.
Well, I'll admit this, and I'm not ashamed to do it. You know, I knew that Javon Kinlaw on the defensive line was a good player. I even wrote about him as part of our cover forward at DogNation.com going back to Friday. However, John, I had no idea that he was this good. I mean, I did not expect the South Carolina defensive line to be able to get the kind of pass rush they got, you know, kind of an even pass rush where they're kind of getting pressure on both sides of the pocket, kind of pushing it from the middle there as well with just four guys. As Kirby said, those are big defensive linemen. They seem to move pretty well, and you know, you probably always feel this way after your team loses a game, but you're left to wonder how the Gamecocks lost three games coming into this, given how good that defensive line looked and how much they're able to help, you know, the Gamecocks kind of drop back into seven-man pass coverage. Like, how are you losing three times if you're playing that kind of defense?
Well, that's a good question. I think you could probably start with the other side of the ball. It really lended itself the way the game played out, where that South Carolina offense didn't have to do much. They caught Devon Wilson on the one out and up and scored a touchdown, and that was it. I mean, our defense, I commend them because that's a difficult game to play in, but South Carolina's offense is pretty stale. I mean, if you're a Gamecock, you love that you got the win, but nothing about it was really exciting. I think they were trying to manage the game and not make a lot of mistakes considering they're on their third quarterback. And luckily for them, the game played out where they could do that. I mean, that's the only way that they win is relying on that defense. And boy, did they come out strong. That defense, you know, Kinlaw's special. He's one of the SEC defensive linemen that you have to circle and star and have a game plan ready for because he's disruptive in the run game and the pass game and proved to be problematic throughout Saturday's contest. but he wasn't alone. Archer's own Kobe's out there and he's making plays, and Sundage made a couple stops.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was across the board. And, you know, I think they're good, but I think the problem is really on the other side of the ball. I think it comes with Georgia's offensive line.
Yeah.
And you know how many guys played left guard on Saturday? Three.
Ooh, that's
how
tough.
Many at right guard? Three. How many at right tackle? Two. So that kind of turnover throughout one game is pretty tough. You know, it's surprising. You start with Solomon Kindley or Schaefer, who, you know, gets hurt, and then Kindley comes in, and he definitely didn't look 100%. He was limping and wasn't nearly as mobile. I mean, his mobility is not his game, but even for him, you could tell that he wasn't close to being game ready. And then you start the rotation. I think Ben Cleveland gets pulled because he has two mental errors back-to-back in the same drive.
Mm.
So that puts Sawyer out there, and Sawyer plays not only right guard but right tackle. So that turnover in the front proved to be really problematic. An area of strength, you know, everybody, and I am guilty of this, of anyone, of saying this Georgia offensive line is elite, and I think they do have the potential to be, but they certainly weren't on Saturday.
So let me park on this topic for a minute, because honestly, everyone wants to hear from you on this because you know the position so well, and you played it at such a high level for your career. And let me start with something you just touched on that I also tried to hit on before you came here. So it seems like to me that a lot of Georgia's issues on Saturday were not necessarily injury-related, even though this group is pretty banged up right now. And it sounds like you think that the lack of continuity, playing five guys for the majority of the game, it sounds like you think that contributes some to what goes on here, which I think a lot of folks are going to take some comfort in because I think they feel that same way. And as I said before, that some of Georgia's issues here on Saturday are not necessarily injury related. Would you mind just kind of following up on that point again?
Yep. And let me be honest, I'm going to be overly critical, and that's the way I played the game. And that's the way I was trained to do it, especially after a loss. I mean, things look worse when you lose, and you can win an ugly game, and it covers up mistakes that you probably don't want to cover up. So this is it's a critical eye. But let's start with the guys that started the game. I thought Trey Hill, he gets pushed back into the backfield a couple plays in the run game that proved costly. He's a starter. Isaiah Wilson, in normal pass situations, he collapses the pocket. And so those are starters. Your first turnover is between Cade Mays and Isaiah Wilson on the right side of that line when Kinlaw runs a tackle ends game where that tackle's bursting up the field and the end's going to wrap underneath him. Well, Cade Mays doesn't carry him far enough to Isaiah, and Isaiah doesn't close quick enough, and there's penetration. And Jake Fromm, who, you know, granted the decision – in hindsight, would be to just tuck it and eat a nasty sack. But you don't turn the ball over, but he's throwing off his back foot because South Carolina's right in his face. So that's an offensive turnover that I think the offensive line, you know, you watch it on film that following day, and you have to take some ownership of that.
Mm-hmm.
The next turnover was the fumbled snap. I think Trey Hill gets the ball up and it hits Jake Hands, and it probably is on Fromm. Third turnover is a pass to Matt Landers where it looks like he gets tied up, probably missed his spot. I don't know if that's on Jake Fromm. And then the final turnover is bounces off the hands of Tyler Simmons.
Mm-hmm.
So you spread that around. But speaking back to the offensive line, I mean, that left guard position, you start with Schaefer and he gets dinged up. I think Schaefer was playing pretty well just in general, and so that kind of proves costly. Solomon, not the same. He kind of gets pushed-pulled on one of the pass reps. That's a quarterback hit. So you try to rotate him out because he's not ready to be back. And then Cade moves over to left guard. You got Ben Cleveland came in, have a couple mental errors. And who knows? I'm just watching film,
sure.
And I don't know the exact play calls, but that's what it looked like to me. It looked like in one series, on a run play, he goes to the wrong linebacker, which, candidly, that happens multiple times throughout this game. They ran a lot of one-back runs, and usually it's the the center and the quarterback get on the same page. They identify a guy, and that sets the which five guys that offensive line takes. And multiple times to me, there was some confusion. There's two guards going to the same linebacker. There's empty or free defenders in the hole, especially in that in overtime. There's two linebackers and a defensive lineman in the face of DeAndre Swift. There's nothing a running back can do in that situation.
Yeah.
So I keep going on and on because I went back and watched it.
Sure.
How does this happen? How does the number three team in the country lose to a team that comes in with three losses? How does that happen? They're unranked. And, you know, it starts off where everybody gets ownership. Everybody gets to own it. But quite honestly, everybody that gets to own it should be, in my opinion, in that offensive team meeting room saying, we let our defense down because, you know, outside of one play, one mistake that ended in a touchdown, they played very solid, in my opinion.
Yeah. No, I think that's
– did you see that? I was on my soapbox. You pulled my string, man.
No, listen. This is what people want to hear. You played the position at a very high level. You earned an NFL paycheck doing this job. So your opinion on this matters a great deal, and people are very glad to hear from you on this. The one common thing that I've heard from fans, and admittedly I guess I'm in there on this too, is that the level of play calling, people will either call it conservative, predictable, unimaginative. I think those are just synonyms for unexplosive, frankly, but also specifically those words probably work in their own regard as well, specifically on second down. I started that on Friday. Georgia runs on second down more than almost any other team in America on Saturday. It was once again the case, and it was ineffective when they did that. So, John, once again, as someone who has, you know, not just the love of a fan but the eye of a player, do you think that Georgia's offensive play calling has been too conservative, in particular on Saturday against South Carolina?
I went back when I watched the film. I had those glasses on. I was watching for, is this too conservative? Are we not taking shots? And we took shots in that game, especially to George Pickens. There was a play down the sideline. There's a play action pass in the second half. I mean, they tried to take their shots. Now, my criticism of play calling probably happens most in the 2-minute drill at the end of the first half and the second half. The play management there and the clock management with two timeouts at the end of the second quarter, that seemed to be almost too aggressive. So you're trying to get these huge chunk plays and not realize that there's enough time on the clock, and in college football they'll stop the clock for you to move the chains for a first down. Well, you had plenty of time to advance the ball and get some points at the end of the first half, and then obviously the penalty at the end of the game. I mean, Georgia's in a situation where, if managed well, you kick a field goal, you don't go into overtime, much less double overtime, and you steal back a win that came out of a hideous game offensively. Mm-hmm. So those two situations, to me, is where you go, man, that play calling was a little more suspect. Now, I get it that we all feel like, man, it was, we didn't take the shots. I thought they did. I thought, well, having watched it again, they tried to dial up some shot plays. They just didn't hit. Pickens drops a ball I think it's the third quarter. We try to hit him across the middle, right in the middle of the field, and you know, we try to stretch him out down the sidelines in front of the South Carolina bench. So there were some plays. We just didn't hit on any of them. We didn't hit on any of the plays. South Carolina did an unbelievable job of the quote-unquote bend but don't break defense. They couldn't have executed it any better. They didn't allow any big plays. They kind of bottled up our running backs, and yeah, they had their yards. I mean, it's 7-6. There's fives. Georgia stayed in short yardage third down situations for the most part, but South Carolina was able to execute, and they said, we're going to bend but don't break, and you're going to make the first mistake, and we did.
So I don't mean to bring up a bad subject for you, but you were a part of an undefeated season. You guys lost a game to Florida, and back then, you know, obviously Georgia fans were just so hungry for a win against the Gators because they hadn't gotten a lot of them back then. And so, I'm sure for that following week, things were a little bit different. Normally, it's a pretty good thing to be a Georgia football player. Everybody tells you they love you all the time, but you know how this kind of thing goes, John. That week after a loss, you know, a lot of Georgia fans aren't going to be happy, and in the social media age, some UGA fans kind of take that maybe a little bit too far and say some things they might wish they could take back a little bit later on. But one way or another, as a player, I guess you have to try to insulate yourself from some of that kind of stuff. What's it like for a player this week? How do you circle the wagons knowing that you're not going to be getting as much love in the community as you're kind of used to getting, and people got their feelings hurt about losing the game? Do you have any advice for the Georgia players on that? And can you tell us, who haven't been in that situation, what's it like when you have to kind of lean on your teammates a little bit more because you don't quite have the same energy from the fan base for right now?
Well, we used to joke and say they'll love you till they hate you. And it's talking about everybody around you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
For weeks and months, really, said how great this Georgia team is, and there's so much talent, and you pour on the love, right?
Yeah.
And the coaches are trying to tip the wings of the plane the other direction because they know, they call it rat poison, and it can be toxic. You start believing in those things, and all of a sudden you've glazed over the fact that no team is perfect, and no player is perfect, and no offense or defense has it all figured out, and you have to stay hungry, and you have to stay just eager to get better and fight for every yard, because even a 2-3 unranked opponent can be a real challenge for you if you don't worry about what you have in-house. So that's the tip of the plane when it's when things are going well. Now, this week, it's going to be the opposite of everybody who is on your bandwagon and singing your praises and saying how great you are is going, we can't even beat a 2-3 South Carolina team that's unranked. You know, you look at the rest of the schedule and we still have, you know, can we even beat Kentucky? You got Auburn and you have Texas A&M and Florida and all these teams that before Saturday we were saying, oh, it's going to be a breeze. And now we're saying our offense can't even move the ball against this unranked team. So, yes, you insulate yourself. As a team, as a coaching staff, the players, it's about the opinions that matter are of the guys in that room. And as we talk about it and fans post about it, and let me tell you, as a player, the social media stuff, I had Facebook at the time, but anything more would drive me nuts because you have opinions of people that don't know. They don't put in the work. They don't see the day-to-day operations. They don't understand at the level that some do, but yet they still have that same platform to spew misinformation and just bad football. So, yeah, you insulate yourself, and you have to go back to work, and you have to stay hungry, and that's what makes the game of football so awesome.
I know I've kept you long, and I apologize for that. If you don't mind, though, I want to squeeze in one final question for you. Some Georgia fans in the last, 24 hours or so have noticed that there was obviously the celebration by South Carolina players in the field, and they see the hedges get ripped up. That's what opposing teams have tried to do to Georgia for a long time. But in this game in particular, some UGA fans have said because that Will Muschamp is a Georgia alumnus that he should have maybe done more to try to prevent that. Is this fair game that the winner gets to celebrate how he wants to, or because Muschamp is a UGA alumnus, did he have an extra responsibility to maybe see to it that his team behaved in a little bit more classy of a manner after the game on Saturday? I know you care about the university. Do you have a thought on that?
Yeah, and I think it's neither. I think you should be able to celebrate, and that's a huge win for their program. It's a huge win for Coach Muschamp, who I'm sure was starting to feel some hot buns over there, if you will.
Yeah.
But destruction of property is never the answer. And I think there is a right way to win games, just like there's a right way, I guess, to lose them. Which you try to stay classy. I think South Carolina earned the opportunity to celebrate, but when you start destroying things, I mean the hedges will grow back. That's not the issue. I think just being destructive is not the answer and not the best way to celebrate. It's like, you know, you watch some of those hockey teams and they're rioting in the streets. Well, who does that make sense to anyone? So just celebrate the win. Should Will Muschamp feel more responsibility? I mean, every coach wants their team to perform with class. At least that's my hope. Maybe I'm optimistic, but I don't think he had any more. I don't know what's the right word there. Any
obligation.
More responsibility for his team because it's his alma mater for taking the high road of not tearing up property than any other coach should. I would expect the same from our staff, and you know, if we have a big win in somebody else's house, that you celebrate and you can enjoy it with your fans that made the trip and revel in the glory of a big win like what South Carolina had. But you have to know that destroying the other team's stuff is not the way to do it. And it's the same thing if somebody, you know, going to the middle of the star in Dallas Cowboys Stadium and scratching up the turf, all those things, man, that's silly to me.
All right, John, there will be happier discussions to be had this Thursday, 6 p.m. for our Marlowe's matchup. Excited about being back at the Marlowe's and Dunwoody for this one. We'll kind of figure out where Georgia goes from here with the Wildcats looming on Saturday. It's 1317 Dunwoody Village Parkway, Dunwoody, Georgia. It's this Thursday, 6 p.m. Please join us there, Marlowe's and Dunwoody, for our Marlowe's matchup. Myself, John Stinchcomb, you hear the passion in John's voice and the expertise in his breakdown. He'll give you more of that both on the air and kind of a private conversation in our Q&A this upcoming Thursday. And by the way, for anyone who comes this Thursday dressed in red and black, when you mention you heard this here on Dog Nation Daily, they're going to give you a free appetizer on Thursday there as well. So it's 1317 Dunwoody Village Parkway, Marlowe's Tavern in Dunwoody, for our Marlowe's matchup. John, thanks for spending so much time with us today. I really appreciate it, and I look forward to seeing you on Thursday.
I look forward to it, B.A. You know what the best thing is?
What's that?
That I'll be a dog for life.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right, John.
It's a good thing.
Well said, and a great way to end it. Thanks for your time.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Yeah, I think that's well said by John. You know, obviously, John is more than just a graduate of Georgia, and he's more than just a former player. This is a guy who is heavily invested with his money and his time and everything else into not just the athletic department but the university itself. The Stinchcomb family is obviously as tied to Georgia as anybody ever could be. So when you hear him breaking that down, you hear the passion, you hear the love, you hear the concern, but you also hear the honesty. And I hope that you're as grateful for that as I am, that a guy like that's willing to take his time to say, here's what I saw, here's what I think, here's how it can get better, and I'm hopeful as much as anybody that takes place. I loved that from John Stinchcomb. Also, I really enjoyed his discussion on the Hedges situation there as well. And I guess my one takeaway, and I'm going to do this really, really quick because I got a lot of stuff I got to do in today's program. Georgia has a tendency to treat the other SEC schools as if they're all like 14 business partners and they're all in this together to make as much money as they can together. And when you see the way that South Carolina behaves in a situation like this, you realize, no, they don't think of it the same way. You know, they're here to you know, beat you, make you look bad, and they're gonna dance on your field if they get a chance to. And so the idea that, you know, after every one of these instances, Georgia kind of fires off a strongly worded letter, South Carolina doesn't care about that. You think Ray Tannert spends 5 seconds caring about that? My assumption is that he probably doesn't. My assumption is South Carolina's happy to take those Hedges back, and I'm guessing they'll display those in their new athletic department at some point in time. I mean, you know, this is a cutthroat league, and when somebody gets the best of you, they're going to be happy about it. And South Carolina was on Saturday, and hopefully Georgia has a long memory about this kind of stuff and realizes that you got to be just as cutthroat and just as intense in every single instance when it comes to the competition within the league. With that said, let's do our SEC through. Obviously, my friends at MyBookie, want to make sure you're aware of them. I lost 2 games on Saturday by a half a point. Now, I'm not going to give you my fish story of the one that got away, but I know many of you are doing better with your picks than I am. I've just had not only did my team lose on the field on Saturday, I couldn't get a pick right if I tried, but a lot of you are doing a lot better than me, so that means you're making some money with my friends at MyBookie. Those of you that have already gotten your first deposit in, I know you've made money because MyBookie gave you a big-time first deposit bonus. So use the promo code DOGNATION. Find MyBookie online. Just type that into your browser. Then use the promo code DOGNATION. You can get a double your first deposit. They'll give you up to $1,000, I think. They got the best player perks in the industry. They got the easiest no-hassle payment in the industry. They take good care of you. Find MyBookie online. Use the promo code DOGNATION and get a big first deposit bonus when you sign up. All right, let's roll through some of the games of the weekend. Florida LSU to begin with. two things here. It is amazing to me how Joe Brady, the passing game coordinator of the Tigers, has transformed that offense. I mean, it is not just a lot different than it was a year ago. The truth is Joe Burrow started playing a little bit better towards the end of the last year, so Burrow's a pretty good quarterback. But this is like magnitudes better than it had been in the beginning of the Orgeron era, certainly in the Les Miles era. Brady's the perfect example that coaching matters. When you identify a guy who can breathe life into your offense, the results speak for themselves. For LSU on Saturday against a very good Florida offense, the results spoke for themselves. This is a very impressive team, arguably the best team in the country right now, based on a win versus Florida and a road win against Texas. That speaks really, really highly of what LSU is doing. Pretty impressive. Now, on the other side of things, y'all know I don't like Florida, but you got to give them a little bit of credit here. They handled the environment in Death Valley far better than Georgia did a year ago. And there were, I'm guessing, a lot more Georgia fans in Tiger Stadium in 2018 than there were Florida fans there yesterday, just based on the secondary ticket market prices and things like that. But Florida did not wilt under pressure. Kyle Trask has some shaky moments again, and I think it's odd that Dan Mullen's playing Emory Jones right now as much as he is. Certainly Mullen was trying to showcase his own brand of dynamic play calling, at times maybe getting a little too cute, but Florida for the most part was in that game till the end. Now the MyBookie folks will tell you that LSU covered, and it did, but Florida hung around. You got to give them credit, and I think it sets up a situation with Georgia looking bad and Florida looking good. The feeling around the cocktail party admittedly is a lot different now. You can't say that any other way. Do I think that Georgia's going to run scared in that game? No, I don't. My advice to Georgia fans would be you shouldn't run scared either. You know, this is the SEC. Rivalry games are the lifeblood of this entire league. But the fortunes, at least in terms of how we see the game going into it, are a little different now than they were. A couple other thoughts here real quickly. Kentucky sort of holds off Arkansas on Saturday, wins. Lynn Bowden, who had been a really good, is it Bowden, Bowden, however you say his name, had been a good wide receiver, transitions over to play quarterback for the Wildcats on Saturday, and he's given him a little bit of a spark right now. Georgia's a huge favorite again, but you can't overlook Kentucky given the way the Dogs played this past Saturday, coming up this upcoming Saturday for the 6 p.m. kick there at Dooley Field at Sanford Stadium. Alabama, Texas A&M. Nick Saban kind of rehashes the whole rat poison thing at the end of this game. You know, they kind of got into a little bit of a shootout with A&M there for a while. The truth is I didn't see a ton of this game. But when you've got an offense that's as explosive as Alabama's is, wide receivers who create separation as well as the Crimson Tide receivers do, that makes winning these kinds of game easy. When a team sort of shows some life in their own stadium and they could put you in a little bit of a dogfight, Alabama's got the offensive separation right now to step on the gas and pull away from that. And admittedly, UGA fans are probably a little envious of that right now. And then I skipped the Tennessee thing. I'm sorry. So Tennessee did beat Mississippi State. I think it makes it all the more likely that Joe Moorhead becomes the next coach at Rutgers. This is a good win for the Vols to win at home as an underdog. Kind of a rough look for Mississippi State right now. Not a good football team at the moment, and I think Moorhead is one of the guys you blame for that. Then the other school from the Magnolia State here for a moment there as well. Missouri does beat Ole Miss, and I'm not surprised by that necessarily. This is one of the games I lost by a half point because Rebels did cover. Kind of an odd coaching decision by Luke in this. I don't know how many of you even saw this. He was rotating John Rhys Plumlee and Matt Corral a little bit more than I thought he would. I mean, based on what I've seen from Ole Miss lately, I think that John Rhys Plumlee has won that quarterback job. I'm not sure they should be playing Corral at all. They did some on Saturday, and that seemed to affect the rhythm of this game. I'm not sure they win it either way, but not playing Plumlee is a mistake that I think that Luke probably should feel like he needs to answer for. But nonetheless, that was the decision, and we'll make that your SEC through. And coming back here to talk about the Georgia Bulldogs here for a moment, let's kind of focus in on the situation with Jake Fromm, who played a bad game and in particular had, I think, the worst throw of his career when feeling hurried, tried to throw the ball out of bounds and didn't quite get it there. It led to a pick six. You know, I thought that Kirby Smart struck the right tone after the game, showing support for Jake Fromm, kind of firing back at the mob on Twitter, who's always coming for guys after they've, you know, had a bad moment, and, you know, also showing some honesty about what he wants to see better from his quarterback. Here is Kirby after the game on Fromm.
I don't have to say anything to those people. I'll be honest with you. They have a right to use whatever they want to display what they want. That's what Twitter's about. I believe in Jake Fromm. Jake Fromm's a leader of men. He gives tremendous effort week in and week out. He tried to throw the ball away and didn't get enough on it to get it out of bounds, and the kid picked it off. We fumbled a snap. You know, it rarely happens with our guys. It happened today. I can't tell you exactly why it happened. One ball was dropped, and it ended up being intercepted off that. So it's tough. It was a tough day. We were not effective enough, efficient enough offensively. And they did enough with our run game where you still look at it statistically, 468 to 297, you outgain them. But it's the critical times in which the turnovers happened. You can't go 4-0 in the turnover margin and expect to win a game. It just doesn't happen.
So I think that's the right balance from Kirby there. He supports his quarterback. He kind of pushes back against the Twitter mob, which is probably appropriate. And he admits that it was not Jake's best game and that for Georgia to be good, Jake's got to play much better than that. I actually like that from Kirby on Fromm. As far as what did happen on the pick six after the game, Fromm tried his best to explain it from his vantage point.
I mean, I thought I put enough on it. You know, I knew I was throwing in his direction. I either thought, you know, it was going to be an only ball where he could catch it or out of bounds. And, you know, I never saw the player or know what happened. I just know I was on the ground and getting back up trying to make a tackle.
And, of course, Kirby a moment ago called Fromm a leader of men. And even after the disastrous pick six and the other three turnovers that impacted Georgia on Saturday, Fromm tried to get back on that horse of leadership in his post-game press conference, sending a message to the team about where he thinks they need to go from here. Here's Jake again.
I mean, guys come back together and we go back to drawing more and we get better. I think it's a great opportunity for us as a football team to really get close, really get tight and say, hey, you know, what do we want to do as a football team? And everybody get on the same page moving forward.
I've got a message about Fromm for myself coming up in a moment. Before that, let me tell you about my friends at Kroger. You know, fresh frites are back at Kroger, getting ready for Halloween. If you've got young kids like me, I know you're looking forward to that. You can save on everything you need from Halloween. What about decorations, costumes, spooktacular sweets? I do like saying that phrase. When you download the Kroger Plus card, you can save on Hershey's assorted sweet tarts and all kinds of stuff more. So lots of fun candy savings at Kroger to get ready for Halloween, which will be here on October the 31st. So let's go ahead and wrap up the show, and I'll kind of share my thoughts about Fromm. I think football is just a different kind of sport in that, you know, in baseball, you can be like the catcher hitting 224, but if you're a strong clubhouse presence, you can be a leader. We see NBA veterans all the time there as well. They're like the last year of their career. They're not playing a ton, but they're kind of a good guy to have in the locker room. They're a good guy to have on plane flights because they can sort of teach younger players. In baseball, basketball, sports like that, you don't necessarily have to be great to lead. But football is a little bit different, where you're putting your life on the line on the field. If you're not one of the guys that's doing that, I'm not sure anyone wants to hear you. And so that's why Fromm's position as a leader has always been so important, because he's the quarterback who's playing well for Georgia. And in football, when you're the good player choosing to lead, there's just an amplification to that. So for Fromm to be the kind of leader that he can be, he needs to be played better than he did on Saturday. My guess is that he probably will. By the way, speaking of the Gators, Gator Hater Updater, 1,080 days. We'll see you tomorrow, Dog Nation Daily, presented by Georgia United Credit Union.